Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode.
Happy Wednesday, Women of Strength. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am your host today, Paige, and I'm joined by my co-host, Lily. We have a wonderful guest today that we are so excited to talk to. Her name is Allison, and she is joining us from Ohio. She is also one of our VBAC Link certified doulas. So welcome, Allison.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Before we dive into her story, we are going to have a review of the week. Bye, Lily.
Amazing. Women of Strength. This one comes from Apple Podcasts. It is from Cassie. And the title says VBAC. It says, I am so grateful for this podcast. I listened to so many episodes after having an emergency C-section for a breech baby. I was terrified to give birth again because I didn't want a C-section and a VBAC seemed scary. I knew two people who had a uterine rupture. However, the evidence-based information and stories helped me figure out the right choice for myself and taught me to advocate for myself, which was helpful after having another breech baby. I'm grateful to say that God gave me the VBAC I've been praying so hard for. Thank you for your podcast and the VBAC course. So fun. So Cassie, if you're listening, congratulations on your VBAC. We're so thrilled for you. And thanks for taking the course and listening along to the podcast. We're truly honored to be a small piece of your VBAC journey.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same, to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
Also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Okay, now we will introduce our guest, Allison. She, like I said, is from Ohio and is a doula serving the community in the Dayton, Ohio area. She is a mama to three, and all of her births have been very different. So we will dive into her stories and get to see just how different they were. Her first was a vaginal birth, and her second was a C-section, a planned home birth turned C-section, and then her third was an HVAC. So without further ado, we will turn the time over to you, Allison.
Thank you. I'm so excited to share. Okay, so my first planned pregnancy, no complications at all. It was your typical first time, you know, pregnant mom. I was the first in my friend group, first in my family to have kids. So I didn't have a big, you know, circle to kind of rely on and learn from. So I picked a provider that I knew some other family members had used, just an OB in the area. And I was induced around, I was 40 weeks and 2 days, just because the doctor was like, why not? And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. I get to meet my baby, right? Thankfully, especially as a doula, knowing what I know now, I had a very smooth induction. I was induced that morning around 7 or 8 a.m. and had her by 3:30, which I feel like, yeah, does not happen often. So I feel really blessed in that matter. Her delivery was just fine. I had Pitocin, I had the epidural. So again, I had all the things because I was not prepared by any means. Super happy with the birth, and I think it played out great. Learned a lot from it, though. something that did come up complication-wise was my placenta did not come out as quick as the provider would have liked to see it come out. So he tracked in my placenta a little too early. So it came out in pieces, actually. So afterwards, they were like, okay, you know, we're going to go in and double check, make sure we got all the placenta out. So he manually extracted my placenta, which at the time, again, like I had no idea what was going on. I had my baby on my chest. I was like, oh, this is so great. And I really didn't even know what happened until discussing with my husband, kind of, you know, playing it out. You know, a few months go by and you're like, wait, what actually happened? And then I found out even more after I get into my second pregnancy and deciding on the third. I did get my birth reports from my first birth and my second birth. And I tried to like decipher everything, got the hospital report. So I learned a little bit more from that too. But overall, like a good birth, I didn't have any complaints. And I'm like, yeah, that played out great for how it could have went, you know?
Did your report show how long it ended up being until he removed it?
It didn't. Not specifics, but I know it was like, I mean, it was maybe 5 minutes. I'm not sure if there were any signs that it was ready or wasn't ready, but it was very much like, you know, okay, baby's out. Okay, time to get the placenta out and just, you know, take off his gloves and leave the room. So I know that it all happened very quickly. That's for sure.
Yeah. And so for women of strength that are listening, what can we expect when we're thinking about like that third stage of labor? What do you see as a doula most often as far as like patients of providers? How long do people typically like feel comfy, especially in a hospital setting, waiting for the placenta?
So this is something I create a birth plan with all my clients. So this is something that we talk about and we say, you know, the placenta can take anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes. Like that's very normal. I'd say on average, like you maybe see within 15 minutes, right? Like I feel like that's pretty typical, but I'm like, yeah, up to 45 minutes. Like that's totally normal too. That's in the realm of normal. So we talk about waiting to see that gush of blood, signifying that your placenta has detached. And then from there, like, yeah, some gentle traction may be needed. That may be helpful. You may be asked to cough or maybe give some other pushes, and that's normal too. But what we don't want to see is have that cord tracked before there's showing any signs of readiness from your placenta. So whether the mom is feeling crampy or you see that kind of little gush of blood showing that the placenta is ready, if you're not having those signals, then it's just best to wait. So yeah, we put that in our plan, like no traction or gentle traction, or just wait, have patience until it's ready. Talk to me about that and what, you know, kind of what's going on with my body and my placenta.
Do you notice any differences with like home birth midwives in your area and how they manage the third stage of labor versus a hospital provider?
They are way more patient. So in our area, we even have a birth center. So the main hospital in our area, you do have a birth center, which is a really great option for women who kind of want that like hands off, but also like the safety of the hospital if they want that safety net. And they can deliver their baby in the water, which is great, but like they can't deliver their placenta in the water. That's their hospital policy. So it is still like, they're still more patient in the birthing center and in the hospital. Like I don't see too much like as quick as what I felt my first birth was like. But yeah, home birth midwives are very much like if you end up delivering in the tub, you can stay in the tub for as long as you feel comfortable. Even if you deliver outside the tub, like you can be hanging out on your couch until you start like it's normally the midwife waiting for you, not just like staring and being like, yeah, these things are happening. It's them waiting to say like, oh, actually, I'm kind of feeling crampy again. And then the midwives are like, oh, well, do you mind? Like, let's see what's going on. So again, waiting for the woman to take that lead and not, you know, just thinking, oh, I think these things are happening because they're just seeing different things, you know? So very much listening to the women, for sure.
Perfect. Thank you. That's so helpful.
You're welcome.
Good. Okay. And then now continue.
So yes. So my second birth, about two and a half years later, we got pregnant again. Again, very much planned. I had learned a lot just because my friends started having babies, more family members had started having babies. So I had more of a circle this time around. And one of my friends had mentioned to me about wanting a home birth if she ever had another. And I'm like, what's a home birth? Like, I had no idea. So she like kind of told me a little bit about it. And I'm like, I love that. Like, I could really see myself doing something like that. So before we got pregnant, like we knew that this was something that we were interested in. So we interviewed or like called around for a few different midwives. The very first one we met, we were like, absolutely. Like my husband was very uncertain about the idea. I was the one that was like putting in the research and just kind of telling him things. But I think that's normal, especially with a lot of women that I talk to now. Like I feel like the husbands kind of have this, oh, I don't know about that type thing until they become more educated, whether that's from their wife telling them. But what was helpful for us is we met the midwife. My husband came with me. We had our list of questions. And by the time we left, he was like, absolutely. Like we hired her on the spot. He felt so comfortable just hearing her and seeing her confidence and answering our questions. So I think, you know, for all the other women listening, that's a big part, is interviewing as many people as you can and meeting them in person with your partner included. So yeah, we hired her very early on in my pregnancy. Midwives in this area, and I think home birth midwives in general, book up very quickly. Good ones, at least. So the moment we found out we were pregnant, we booked her. Everything was great until my 20-week anatomy scan. So at my 20-week anatomy scan, I was diagnosed with placenta previa. Something that in the moment, they were like, you know, it's going to move. Like, it always moves. Like, chances are so high it's going to move. Don't worry about it right now. And I just remember sitting in that ultrasound room just like in tears. And then I felt so bad after, because I'm like, women all over the world are getting like way worse diagnoses than this. And here I am crying because I don't get the birth that I want. So, I mean, I had a lot of support, feeling validated in that and knowing like, okay, there's still a chance, right? So my home birth midwife was amazing. She's like, we're gonna keep doing our thing. Like, we're going to stick with our visits until something changes. And I should mention, I was also getting co-care. So I was seeing an OB practice. It was a midwife, like a hospital midwifery group on top of seeing my home birth midwife. And that just kind of gave us a little peace of mind. That way I was established with a hospital if I had to transfer for any reason, or in this case, like things didn't play out the way that they were planned to play out. So I had another scan at 28 weeks to check if it had moved, and my placenta had not budged. It was completely covering my cervix. So at that point they were like, you know, there's still a chance. We hear stories all the time that it still moves, but they were like, in your case, it's probably here to stay. So my home birth midwife again was amazing. And she was like, you know what? You can stick with your OB care. But she's like, if anything changes last minute, like, you can call me. So I felt really reassured in that. Now, my OB that I saw shortly after that 20-week scan, he was very confident that we were going to look at an early delivery. He also told me about the risk of bleeds before delivery, which happened in my case. So I was about 29, 30 weeks, and I had my first bleed. And this happens just because your placenta is filled with vessels, right? Blood vessels. So as baby gets heavier and starts leaning on your placenta, it's just, you know, the pressure just causes some extra bleeding. But we don't want your placenta delivered before baby, right? That's a bad situation. So my first bleed, it happened right before bed. It was very, very small bleed. But you know, the doctors have told me any signs of bleeding, like, we need you to come in. So it was very, very small. I went in. I actually received a steroid shot to help with baby's lung development if it did look like I was going to have to deliver early. And I was there for maybe 24 hours. It was an overnight stay. I didn't have any more bleeds. They sent me home, not on full bed rest, but just like, be mindful of what you're doing. Again, I had a toddler at home at this point. So just it was October, for example. So like, they were like, no hay rides and no, you know, no strenuous bouncing or like strenuous activity, things like that. And then a few weeks later, again, it was right before bed. I was 33 weeks and I had a very large bleed just out of the blue. And there's no signs of it happening. It's not painful. It doesn't feel crampy, nothing like that. It was just, I went to use the restroom before bed and it was like a gush of blood. And I looked at my husband and I was like, we got to go. Like, this was way different than the first one. So at that point, we went to the hospital and I was admitted. I had another round of steroid shots. Just again, that helps with baby's lung development, knowing at this point for sure, like, we were probably looking at an early delivery. I also had magnesium, so that was a fun time. And then
blue in a bag.
Yes, yeah. So I had bleeds every few hours from this point forward. So I was at the hospital for a week until finally I had one very large bleed where, like, it looked like a massacre in the room. From the time that I sat up, it was at night, I woke up to it, I walked from there to the bathroom, and it was just really, really bad.
How scary.
It was very scary. Yeah, it was. So there was a hospitalist that came in and she was like, we need to do a C-section right now. And just like very overwhelming. Mm. And the provider that I had talked to, he is very family centered. So he's a really great OB. We had talked about what a gentle cesarean had looked like, knowing that I was planning a home birth in the first place. He was very open to like, no arm restraints and no drape, skin to skin, if baby looked good. So I was 34 weeks on the dot at this point when this happened. We still did delayed cord clamping. So knowing that he was going to come in at 7 a.m., I just asked to wait. I was like, is this an emergency? You know, at this point, my baby was still going on the monitors on and off. Every few hours, they put the monitors on to listen to her heart rate. She was doing totally fine. I was still doing totally fine. So I was like, you know, it's 3 a.m. What's waiting a few hours? Go ahead and get me prepped for the C-section. But I really want my provider to do it, just because we had discussed like what that looks like for me.
That's great advocacy.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one thing I'm like, I'm really glad. Again, that co-care, to be able to discuss that and find a provider that was like on my side, because that made a huge difference in my experience. Something that could have been way more traumatic, but he made me feel comfortable in that. So I'm very thankful for him. So yeah, he came in at 7. I was ready to go. So back we went. Now, in the moment, obviously, we knew I had the previa. So she came out 34 weeks screaming. She looked great. She was 5 pounds, 6 ounces, healthy as can be. So as he, baby went over to the warmer for a little bit just to double check, make sure everything's okay. And as he was like, looking at internal things, he was like, well, you know how we kind of brought up Akrita? So I had asked him about that earlier in my pregnancy. Like, I was like, from my, research I've done, I've noticed that a lot of women with previa also have Akrita. And he was like, well, not necessarily. He's like, honestly, it's something I don't feel like we should discuss right now. I don't feel like you're at high risk for that. So we don't need to worry about it. So I kind of dropped it. But then at my C-section, he was like, you know how we kind of talked about that? He's like, now you do have Akrita.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what Akrita is for those who are listening that don't know?
Yeah. So previa is when your placenta is over your cervix. So you cannot have a vaginal birth because, like I mentioned earlier, we don't want your placenta to come out before baby. Akrita is when your placenta actually attaches to your uterine wall. And that can come in different levels. So it can attach to your bladder. It can attach as deep as, different linings. So mine was not deep. It was just my uterine wall, but it was definitely not going to release on its own. So he did have to extract that, but he did place a Foley balloon in. So what that looked like is I had the Foley putting pressure on where my placenta came off of on my uterus, which saved me from having hysterectomy. So he was able to save my uterus from that. So that balloon was in for maybe about 12 hours. And he told me it could be up to 24. So the balloon stayed in for about 12 hours. I stood up to like use the restroom or take a shower or something. And it just came out. And he had told me if it comes out and there's no extra bleeding, we're probably in the clear. Nothing to worry about. He was like, but if it comes out and we do see more bleeding than we like to see, we may have to discuss further options. But thank God that was not my case. So my bleeding stayed very minimal, no further complications. And we did have a week-long NICU stay, really just for weight gain. So I had a Ronald McDonald room. So for those who don't know, or if you have those in the area, it was like a little just mini hospital room that was down the hallway from the NICU. One bed, one shower. Very, very cozy room. But I got to be right there so I could go in every 3 hours, still nurse her, still hang out with her. My husband kind of went back and forth between our daughter at home and the hospital stay. So this was also just right after post-COVID. So regulations were really tight. We didn't have a lot of visitors. Honestly, it was probably one of the hardest times of my life, just dealing with that on my own and lots of tears and feeling like I was missing out on my toddler at home, but like also feeling like I couldn't leave my NICU baby. But thankfully, we were only there for a week. We came home and she's been awesome. We've had no further issues. So
that's great. That is so hard to have a NICU stay recovering from a C-section as well. And it's a lot.
It was a lot. Yeah. But I mean, even though it was COVID and we couldn't have a lot of visitors, we still had lots of support, in other ways, bringing us food, sending us gift cards, family obviously helping with our toddler. Like we still felt very, very supported in the moment, which I was so thankful for.
That's great.
We needed that. Yeah.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So then come my third pregnancy. So I should also mention, it took us a long time to decide if we wanted another, just because we knew obviously risk of a C-section and the risk of Akrita and previa could happen again, just because your placenta does like to attach to scar tissue. And I just really did not want to go through any of that experience ever again. And I felt really, really let down in the birth that I didn't get. And I was like, what would that look like again if I didn't get that birth again? Like, it's taken me this long to heal from this. Like, what would that look like? So I saw a therapist for a little bit, and just like, I really just wanted to get everything out there. I told my husband that if we were going to have a third, I needed to be able to let everything go. I needed to just trust myself and my body. And no matter how birth played out, I wanted to be able to do all the things to say that I tried my best for a VBAC. And I knew that I also only wanted to have my baby at home. I was like, hey, I don't want another hospital birth. I really, really just want a healthy pregnancy and healthy baby. And I want to have this, you know, this home birth that I've always dreamed of. So I did pelvic floor therapy. I saw a chiropractor. I did massages throughout my pregnancy. I did like scar massage. So my pelvic floor therapist also, this is great for women to know if it hasn't been talked about already, but it wasn't just like pelvic floor related. We focused on my C-section scar and scar tissue, and we did cupping and we did dry needling and really focusing on like the mobility of my scar and breaking down that scar tissue. So hopefully the risk of my placenta attaching to it was lower. So that's something that I always recommend for women who do want to be back, is focusing on that scar healing too before aiming to get pregnant again. I think that makes a big difference.
It helps with the numbness too.
Yeah.
You know, like as you heal, I remember my own story just being really terrified that I was going to be numb forever. And then going to pelvic floor PT was so helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I had like one little spot on the right side of my scar that was like just barely numb. Like the rest of it felt fine, but that part was. And I feel like after working with my pelvic floor therapist, like it definitely got some of that feeling back.
It's connected to our emotions too. I was telling Lily, I just had a friend a couple of days ago. It had been years since her C-section. She had two, and she went into pelvic floor therapy for some scar treatment. And she's like, Paige, I hadn't even touched my scar this whole time. And that's true for a lot of women. It's just a part of your body that's new, that's icky, that you don't want to think about or touch. And she said she actually got nauseous in her appointment. And and then her PT said that's like the body's nervous system letting go of a traumatic event or trauma happening to the body. So there's a lot of emotional releases too that can happen with it. It's so good.
Yeah, I agree. That's amazing though. So yeah, I just felt like I wanted to do all the things to be able to say I tried my best. That way, no matter how birth played out, I could be confident in doing all the things. So once we got pregnant, we finally decided like, yep, this is, we've always pictured a family of three. I felt like I had done healing on my end to be confident in what the future held. And my husband, honestly, he was just so supportive of whatever I decided. Like he kind of left it in my ballgame. Like if you feel like you can handle another pregnancy and like emotionally that's good for us. Like he's like, I'm here for it. He was ready. So we, you know, a few months in, we got pregnant. And I should say too, I consulted a lot of doctors on top of this before getting pregnant again. I consulted home birth midwives. I consulted other OBs. I reached out to Dr. Sue Fishbein from, so I was like, I just want like clarity. I want people to tell me like, yes, you can do this, and just build that confidence. And really like almost everyone I reached out to was like, yeah, this is a possibility for you. So that really helped too. So I immediately reached out to my home birth midwife saying that we were trying, reached out to her when we got pregnant, and she was like, absolutely, like I'm on board. Let's do this. So I guess from there, pregnancy was like no complications. Everything was great. Definitely harder having two little ones now to run around with. The fatigue was real on top of being a doula. So getting those 2 a.m. calls, you know, I continued. So my son, my third, was born in April, and I continued doing births up until end of March, like beginning of March. So I was in it, sleeping.
You're
in
superwoman.
Yeah, I was so scared to step away though. I was like, it'll be fine, I can do it. But I should say too, it was like this amazing experience of like carrying a child, both witnessing other women bring children into the world. Like, I don't know if it was just my hormones or what, but like it was definitely special. So this was a surprise gender too. So we have two daughters at home, and we knew that this would probably be the last baby. And being at births that I witnessed and seeing, you know, families not know the gender, it just added this whole extra emotion in the room. And I was like, I want that. So we didn't know the gender. We had assumed it was a boy just from my symptoms and being so different than my other two pregnancies. So come 39 weeks, I asked my home birth midwife, I was like, can I do a membrane sweep? Like, Is that okay? And she's like, whatever you like, we can check whatever you want. Cause I'm like, you know, in the crunchy world, in the home birth world, it's very common to just like let your body, you know, do as it needs and take its time. And I was like, but I'm done being pregnant. Like, I am very much on board, but like, I'm ready for something to happen. Actually, I do want to rewind real quick. I want to back up a little bit. I was getting co-care again this time. So just for the same situation, same provider that I saw last time, but they did have a new provider that I hadn't met before. And my OB wanted you to meet at least one OB before the end of your pregnancy. So I met him at like 37 weeks and he was very fear-mongering in the fact of like not only a VBAC, he was not VBAC supportive and he was very anti-home birth. So the fact that I was doing both of those, I went to that appointment and he pretty much told me that I was going to kill myself and my baby. And it was very, very traumatic. Like I left that appointment and I called my husband just in tears. And like, I'm somebody, especially knowing what I know, like a VBAC doula, learning everything from you guys and learning just from, you know, everything else around me and being a regular doula, like I knew what he was saying wasn't accurate and wasn't true. But I feel like, especially when you near that end of your pregnancy, sometimes you start overthinking and you wonder, well, am I making the right choice? Like, especially when somebody is saying these really scary things to you, like you never want to put yourself or your baby, especially in that kind of danger. So I talked to my home birth midwife after that and she was like, absolutely not. She's like, don't, you know, she said all these things that were super comforting and just saying, you know, everything has played out so beautifully this far. You're not high risk. Like there's nothing going on that would make us think that you are on this route at all. He also, that same OB also recommended that I had a growth scan the next week because I was measuring 4 weeks behind my whole pregnancy, but nobody else had had any concerns. My home birth midwife, the midwives at the office I was seeing, nobody had mentioned it. They were like, this is all a variation of normal. We're not concerned about it. So the fact that the one OB who was not supportive also wanted me to get a scan, I did end up scheduling it. But when I got home and chatted with my husband, we just decided, let's just cancel it. Like nobody else has had any concerns. And that's very unlike me. I am somebody who's like, well, they told me like I should just do it. So that was super empowering for me to be like, you know what? No, like I don't feel like I need that. And I feel like everything is going just as it should. So that I wanted to rewind and say that because that was one of my favorite parts of my pregnancy was like standing up for myself because that felt really good.
That's good for you.
Yeah, thank you.
During your pregnancy, during your anatomy scan, did they look to see if your placenta was over your scar or could they tell where your placenta had been? Did they know?
Yes,
where it had
good
attached
question.
With your accreta, and did they look for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I should answer that. So with the accreta, it can't always be detected in ultrasounds, but it can be. So it's something that I did ask for, and it's something that they wouldn't look at in a normal 20-week scan. Like they would look at where your placenta was, but they wouldn't really look for accreta just because that's not high on their radar, right? So I did ask at my scan if they could look, and he did. And what they can see is if you ask for that, and if it is attached enough to your uterine wall, they can see blood flow between your placenta mm-hmm. and your uterine wall. And they showed no signs of that. Now, they were like, you know, ultrasound isn't 100%, so we can't guarantee this, but we don't see that being a case. I had also read about women getting MRIs to see that. And it's something I did ask my home birth midwife about. And she was like, well, there's not a whole lot of research on like pregnant women and MRIs and what that looks like. So we felt like the ultrasound was enough. And we also talked about what it would look like if my placenta didn't deliver, you know, in a timely manner, or if we were seeing any extra bleeding or anything like that. So we talked about what that was looked like. And I was fully prepared if we had to go to the hospital afterward. I was okay with that. So it's something that we had a plan for. And I knew like, this is a possibility. But again, being prepared for that, I feel like helped me like just another step, right? Like another step that'd be like, this could happen. And it's not something that would just come out of the woodworks.
Yeah, that's yeah. great. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. So yeah, at 39 weeks, I asked her for a membrane sweep. I was 1 centimeter. So she's like, and baby was still kind of high up. So she's like, I can't do a productive sweep right now. But she's like, I can try to stretch a little bit and just see what happens. And I was like, yes, do whatever. And she was super gentle. Like I was like, I didn't have a sweep with any other. So I was like, people say like, this is so bad. I was like, it wasn't. But I will say at 40 weeks, I did get another one from my OB. And that was a lot more rough. I was like maybe 2 centimeters, but I also think it was just like the midwife there wasn't as gentle. So it was something where I'm like, I prefer not to have that done again. But again, it wasn't for any reason. It was just like, I was ready for something to happen. I was getting very impatient. I was still ready to go to 42 weeks. Like I even made this little chain link thing countdown for my kids. I had us up to 42 weeks. I was like, this is a very big possibility, but I was ready to try whatever it took. So I had the second membrane sweep. And at 40 weeks, I also tried pumping. So I would sit on my birth ball and I would just pump for a little bit. nothing like crazy. I'd pump for maybe like 45 minutes and just be like, oh, it didn't really do anything for me. And I would always do it in the evenings before bed. I was doing the mile circuit sometimes and just activities that felt good. Like, you know, you can see all these activities, like things to do to, you know, initiate labor. And it wasn't really that. It was just like hands and knees felt really good, or lunging felt really good. Like stretching my pelvis just felt really good. So I was doing that a lot in the evening. And I was 40 weeks and 3 days. It was like 10 p.m. that night. I had kind of dozed off and I woke up around 10 and my husband was still awake next to me. And I was like, hey, like, I'm feeling these things. Like, you might want to go to sleep, because he's a night owl. He would just be up on his phone if he could all night. I was like, so you might want to go to sleep. Like, I may have to wake you up later. And I didn't text anyone else because I was like, anytime I had like one little pain, I would text my mom and be like, hey, I think something's happening. And then it would just stop. So I was like, I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm just telling my husband. And maybe that'll be good luck. So I woke up sometime in the night. It was probably like three in the morning around there. And they were definitely waking me up. The contractions were still very culpable, but I was like, oh, I'm actually like, I think this is actually something. So I text my home birth midwife just to let her know, like, these things are happening. I was like, but I was kind of oblivious. I was like, I'm sure once the sun comes up, like, it'll fade away. Like, I'm just going to try to keep sleeping. So it did. They kept going all night. I was kind of in and out, but still like laying in bed, still very culpable. I woke up around 8. My husband got up with the kids and he was like, just go ahead and sleep. So I slept hard from like 8 to 10. And I was like, that was great. Just what I needed. So I woke up, like, I was still a little crampy, but nothing really was happening. My husband and kids were outside playing on the trampoline. We have like a bunch of woods in our backyard. So I was like, I'm just going to go take a walk. Like, I had a good breakfast and I was like, I'm just going to go take a little walk. So I walked for about 10 to 15 minutes and came back in. And I was like, whew, like, things are really starting to pick up. I'm really starting to feel these contractions. So I'm in contact with my midwife and I'm making my kids lunch and starting to breathe through contractions. And my husband's like, do you think we should like start getting things set up? And I'm like, like we mentioned earlier, I'm having a home birth this time. So I'm like, no, it's still too early. Like, it's fine. So we just keep doing our thing with the kids. And then I start like, I go to the bathroom and I'm like actually vocalizing through contractions. And my husband, like, he's like, are you sure we shouldn't call anyone? And I'm like, no, it's still too early. Like, this isn't that bad. It's fine. Now I'm still texting. I have a doula too. So I'm still texting my doula. I'm still texting my home birth midwife, like telling her these things. I'm timing my contractions. And then I finally go out to the living room. My husband starts setting up the birth pool, just like blowing it up. And I'm like, he knows. I was so oblivious. And he's like, no, things are happening. So I'm on my hands and knees at this point, like on a mat in our living room. And I'm really working through contractions. They're coming like every 3 minutes. And I'm still telling my husband it's too early. I'm like, it's fine. And I had one more contraction. And I was like, my home birth midwife was like, you know, you let me know when things get intense and I'll come your way. She's like, I'm waiting on my assistant. But if you need me to leave earlier, I will. I was like, no, it's okay. I'm not worried about it. And I had one more contraction and I was like, okay, I think you need to come. And she's like, okay, my assistant just got here. I'm on my way. So when she gets here, I ask her to check me. I'm like, I just want to know. I want to know that nobody's here too early. Like, I want to be sure this is it. And I was 9 centimeters with a bulging bag. And she was like, no, this is happening. And they had already told my husband he could start filling up the pool. So it was filled enough. And I wanted to have a water birth. That was the plan. So I get in the water and felt immediate relief. I was like, this feels so nice. So I should say at this point, it's around 1, maybe 2. It's like 1:30-ish when my midwife and doula, they both arrive around the same time. So I start pushing probably around 3-ish. And I felt my water break. So something that was really empowering to me too is after my water broke, I would reach in and feel baby's head myself. And I never thought I'd be the person to do that. But it was like, I loved being able to say like, oh, he's this far. Like, oh, I can feel his head this far. And that gave me this like empowerment. Like, okay, he's so close. Like, I know I can do this. And it was really nice just to have like a team of, you know, your birth team listening to you, not being hands-on and not being like, oh, how about I check for you too? Like, it was just me saying these things and then being like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks for letting us know. So he was born at 3:30. So birth team gets there at 1:30. He was born at 3:30 in the water. He did have a slight shoulder dystocia, which my midwife, you know, she got me in hands and knees. So he was kind of born like outside the water. I was kind of above the pool at this point. And she fixed it very gently, very easily. He came out, no issues at all. My husband got to announce it was a boy, which was super fun. And then from there, we just all cozied up. My placenta came, zero issues at all. Probably within like, I'd have to look back at the chart. But I mean, it was probably within 20 minutes. Came out flawlessly, all intact, and no bleeding issues at all. So It was the healing experience I needed, and I feel really thankful for it.
That's amazing. The picture that you sent us is so stunning. She's in her birth pool, and head over to our socials and you have to see the picture. And is that little man behind you?
That is, yeah. That's him. Yeah. Oh,
that's so amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What a beautiful birth.
Thank you. It really was. Truly. I never thought that, you know, looking back now being a doula, like, you know, the first two births weren't what I had expected. But between an induction and Pitocin and epidural and a C-section and NICU time and now a home birth, natural birth, like, it kind of gives me this relation to all the women, right? Like, no matter how their birth plays out, it's like, I've been there. Like, I can relate to that. Or, oh, this is what you can expect from this experience. Or these are your options with this experience. And I think it all happened for a reason. And now I can, you know, I can be better at what I do for my own experiences. So I feel grateful no matter how they all turned out. I think it was all for a reason. So,
yeah, so absolutely. And then how was your postpartum this time around?
I feel like I didn't even have a baby. It was, you know, even with my first, with the epidural, I had a second degree tear, which is very common for a first time mom. But I mean, the healing was still rough. It still took, you know, a few weeks to be like, oh, I feel like myself again. And then obviously healing from a C-section, that was its whole, you know, own thing and it's in its own. But yeah, after this one, I didn't tear at all. I just felt so supported. I really, really prioritized postpartum this time. So we did a lot of meal prepping and we had a lot of friends and family on hand to help with, you know, our other two kids. And my kids were present for the birth too. So that was really awesome. They got to witness that and see that. And they were so helpful and so sweet. And they had little Polaroid cameras that they were taking their own photos of during it all and like had them all hung up. It was so sweet.
Oh, that is so cute.
But yeah, we really prioritize postpartum. And I think a lot of women kind of forget about that. They focus on their birth and what they need to do for birth and their baby. But then they're like, wait, you know, what about me afterwards? And how do I heal? And how do I feel supported? So I think prioritizing postpartum just as much as birth is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Your VBAC Link certification, was that before you got pregnant with VBAC baby? Like, I'm curious where that
kind of that was after my first pregnancy. So it was, so before the C-section. Oh, sorry. No, that's wrong. It was after my second. So I had the C-section and then it was like a year later. And really before this, like I have a bachelor's degree and I did a lot of things with children and child development. But then after when my oldest was like almost like pretty much when I got pregnant, I decided to stay at home after I had my second and just be a stay-at-home mom. And that was great. But I also was like, I need something for me. Like, what should I do? And I just like kept discussing these things with my husband. And finally he was like, just be a doula. Like, he's like, if that's what you want to do, just do it. Cause I'd brought it up multiple times, but I'm somebody who's like, I'm nervous to make these big purchases and like to jump in. Cause I'm like, what if no one hires me? And what if I like, this is all for nothing. And he's like, no, it's going to be great. So I got that doula certificate, like just regular, you know, childbirth doula certification. And then, yeah, it was shortly after that, a few months after that, I was like, I didn't even know this existed until I started listening to your podcast. And I was like, no, I think this is something a lot of women could benefit from. And even on your guys' website, you know, I don't know if there's any VBAC doulas that are certified in this area. So I think that, you know, is something that a lot of women can lean on and be like, oh, this is something specific that I could use. So yeah, definitely needed.
It's really special.
So Women of Strength, if you're looking for a doula and you're a VBAC doula in your area, you can head over to our website, thevbacklink.com/findadoula. And there is, like Allison was saying, a whole directory where you can look for VBAC doulas in your area. So we're happy to have you in our directory, Allison. I just wanted to, again, congratulate you for having a beautiful birth. And what I love so much is that you are taking pieces from each of your births and seeing the value in all the different experiences and allowing it to help you serve your community in a better way. And it's not that you prioritize one birth experience over the other, but in the same light, you can savor the good things that happen and the sweet things that you got with your third that you didn't get to have with your other ones. The NICU stay, the COVID restrictions and that isolation and being able to have your girls right there with you, taking pictures. I'm sure that made it all just a little bit more sweet.
It did. It did. It was the redemptive experience that I just feel so grateful to have. And I would do it 100 times over if I could.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's so amazing.
And before we close today, Allison, is there anything, any final tips that you want to give our listeners on how to prepare for a VBAC?
Yeah, I'd say my biggest tips are find a supportive provider and do those things before you get pregnant. Find a pelvic floor therapist that specializes especially in that scar mobility. Get chiropractic care if that's something that you're into, or stretch. Make your body feel good. And treat yourself. I feel like the massage really helped too. It was something that I got to look forward to every week. It kept my body real nice. It kept baby aligned. It kept my hips aligned, because baby, you know, optimal position is really important for VBAC. So all of these things are supposed to help with that. So I think all those things are really important, and prioritize your postpartum too. So your birth plan is important. And I also like to say, like, a birth doesn't always go to plan, right? And I learned that in my experiences. So I like to call it more of a birth map. So, hey, if it doesn't go this way, like, what does this route look like? So, you know, I really want to hold off on the epidural. But if I do get the epidural, what are the risks? What are the benefits? And not be so rigid in what your plan is, because sometimes babies just have a plan of their own and we have to follow their lead. So, yeah, I think that's really important. And you can do it. You can have your VBAC and it'll be amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And then how can people find you? Can you tell us a little bit more about your services and your business?
Yeah, sure. So I go by The Minimalistic Doula. So I have a Facebook and I have an Instagram. I also have like a small VBAC online course as well. And then I'm hosting, hopefully it's successful, I'm hosting my first VBAC link, not VBAC link, but just VBAC with confidence course is what I'm calling it. It's an in-person course here in the Dayton area. So I'm happy to start offering that every few months to moms who want more like in person, not just, you know, maybe they don't want a birth doula at their birth, but they're like, hey, what does a VBAC look for me or look like for me? Or, you know, how can I prepare even before I'm pregnant? So I'm really excited to start offering these things that we don't really have, you know, people around here doing that. So I think that makes it all unique. And yeah, I'd love for you to follow and see what I have to offer too. I'd love to be a help.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. What a wonderful resource. And I'm so thankful that your community has you there, especially if that VBAC education is not being offered in that area. So that's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you again for joining us today. And we know that our community will just absolutely love your story.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. And I should say too, at the end, I told my husband when I was pregnant with my third, I was like, I will be on the VBAC link. Like, this is my goal. I want it to happen so bad, because I listened to you guys throughout my whole pregnancy and it gave me so much empowerment and so much knowledge. And I just listening to other women have these success stories is what really made me feel confident too. So I'm just so excited. I was like fangirling when I got to be on here. So thank you guys for being a resource and giving me that encouragement too. I'm really grateful that I was able to share my story and hopefully empower other women just the same.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.